Good evening, everyone. Last lecture before Pesach. Some people, Baruch Hashem, they're not busy with cleaning 3 nights before. It's also something, it's a good news. And instead of speaking about Pesach, all you have to do is just go to my website. You have many lectures about it, about everything you can think of. It's right there. Let's not repeat it. Let's do something I don't think I did before. So we all, Baruch Hashem, living in this world, and we need to eat, and we eat. And we have to know now today what the Torah says about the eating habits, how a person has to behave when it comes to food. So we should know one thing. Today there are many, many sicknesses in the world. Many. So many different sicknesses in the world. Most of the people do not know that many of the sicknesses that they have come from their eating habits. The way they eat, how much they eat, what are they doing while they're eating, affecting all the system of the body and create malfunctioning of the body. All kinds of things do not work well for a while, and eventually it leads to a person to all kinds of problems. So I will show some of the sources, and from this we'll get an idea how the Torah recommends for a person to live. The Gemara says in Masechet Psachim, page 112, 7 things Rabbi Akiva ordered his son. He gave 7 different instructions to his son. One of the things that he told him is, my son, ashkem ve'echol b'kayitz mipnei hachama uv'achoref mipnei hatzina. He said to him, if you want to protect yourself in the summer from the heat, if you want to protect yourself in the winter from the heat, you have to make sure to get up early in the morning from the cold. You have to make sure you get up early in the morning, of course after you pray, whatever, to eat breakfast. Many people skip breakfast. They think it's good for the diet. They say, I can manage. I stretch it until 1. By 1 I'm hungry, I eat lunch, then light dinner, and here you go. I don't eat so much, not necessarily good. So we see that Rabbi Akiva, which was the biggest chacham, had the time to teach his son to make sure always to eat breakfast, whether it's summer, whether it's winter. The chachamim say, chazal, they say, yud gimel dvarim ne'emru bepat shachrit. It's very important to eat bread in the morning. Bread, meaning, if you don't really officially have bread, so you eat, it could be cookies or cake, it's also good, because it also comes from flour and water. But best is to eat actually bread. And what does it say? It saves you from the heat, saves the body, because the body functions different when it's in a very hot temperature, and it functions different when it's a very cold temperature. Now, the temperature also affects the body. Affect the digestion, affect the energy, the sweat that comes out, poisons that are released. In the winter time, you don't sweat so much, so the poison stay in. Summertime, sweat a lot, it releases all the poison out of the skin. It's affecting the entire way. You get tired, you feel fatigue, you feel heavy. What to eat in the summer? Some food rising the temperature of the body. Some food is actually making the body colder. You have to know when to eat what. If you just eat whatever you see, it's not good. Also, you know, different kinds of food affecting different kind of people differently. So here, I just give you right away, I'm dropping a bomb here before we even started the lecture. Everything you ever heard about, eat this, it's healthy, eat that, it's not it's healthy, don't eat this, it's not healthy. You know, all these recommendations that they give, it's not accurate to every person. When they tell you, if you eat meat, it's not healthy, for some people it's not healthy, for some people it's healthy. They tell you don't eat eggs, it's cholesterol, it's not healthy. For some people it's healthy, for some people it's not healthy. All different kinds of food, for some people that the body reacts good to it, some people the body reacts bad for that. The proofs for that is that you see that there are specific foods that some people, if they eat it, they can die right away. Some people, for instance, Kurdish Jews that came from Iraq, Kurdistan, if they eat lima beans, the big ones, they can die within an hour. As soon as they eat it, things happen to them in the body, an emergency room, if you don't get them on time there, they can die. I knew a person that was allergic to eggs. Everything before he eats, he checked 10 times in the ingredients that it doesn't have eggs white, egg whites or yellow or anything. Why? I said, why are you so careful? Well, what would happen if there's a little bit egg in this cookie, let's say? He said, what would happen? Within 5 minutes, my head would be tripled. It would blow up like a balloon. And believe me, you won't want to see what happened to me. It happens to me. After it happened, I don't want to ever take that risk again. So obviously we see somebody next to him ate it, perfectly fine. Somebody else ate it, it affected his body to life risk. So we see food affect people differently. Obviously we see how it reacts. Also, the temper of the people, their traits, the heat, the hot blood, and the anger, and the anxiety, and all these things, we can see that by Sephardi Jews, that what we call Middle Eastern Jews, that come from Syria, Egypt, Morocco, Libya, Yemen, all these Arab countries, all these people, they have different food than the European Jews. For instance, by the way the people eat, you can know a lot about their traits. If they're very hot people, for instance, the Sephardim, they like to hug, to kiss all the time. Contact, lots of contact. It has to be in the family. If you don't hug your uncle, you don't kiss him, by the Persian, by the Moroccan, mwah, mwah, the men, 500 kisses a night, it's an insult. Same thing by the Arabs. So we see all the Middle Eastern people, they must have physical contact when they say hello. If you don't want to shake his hand, it's a very big insult for him. But the Europeans, it's not like that. They don't like contact. They don't like hugs. And if you come to hug them, you see right away their body language. What does he want? This guy wants to hug me. The food already shows about the personality of the people. The European Jews, their temper is colder. It's not as hot. Their blood is not as hot as the Sephardic Jews. Their food is cold and sweet. By the Middle Eastern Jews, their food is red and hot, spicy, fire. The fire, because they are fire. They are fire, everything is contacts and a little bit louder. So you see already the food already shows. Same thing by the Goyim, not only by the Jews. The Goyim of the Middle East, the hot blood Goyim, such as Arabs and others, you can see right away by the way they are. And when you go to Europe, you go to Austria, to Germany, you see how the Goyim eat, you see right away they're different Goyim than the Goyim in the Middle East. For instance, in Italy, everything spicy and red, everything red, 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 they're very warm people, the Goyim, the Italian. Loud, friendly, you know, every little thing gets them excited. You should see how they react for every little thing. But you cross the border, you go to London, you go to Germany, a whole different world over there. Even though it's 2 hours with the train, completely different people, completely different food. So this is very interesting. It shows you how the people, the food that they eat, shows a lot about the personality. Now, the Gemara say there are 13 things that were told about eating, the importance of eating bread in the morning. Pat shachrit. One, it saves you from the heat. Two, it saves you from the cold. Same thing, save you from the cold, save you from the heat. So we see that it has an effect on the body. The body needs that to be able to handle the heat very well and to handle the cold very well. It's very interesting. Because usually the same medicine is not good for two opposite things, right? If a person is too hot, you give him something to make him cold. You don't give somebody that it's cold that you want to make him hot the same thing that makes people cold usually. It doesn't work both ways. But here, that's maybe it's symbolic, maybe it's something spiritual. But this is in the Gemara, and we know that that's something that helps. The third thing, it saves a person from mazikim, all kinds of what we have today. It's not so powerful like it used to be in back in the days. It saves a person from the mazikim. Mazikim could be demons, can be all kinds of things. Malachei chabala, spiritual damages. So we see that the advice over here is not necessarily physical advice. It's an advice that has something more spiritual into it. Pat shachrit, open the wisdom of the person. Machkimat peti, somebody that his mind is not so sharp and makes him sharper. You know, Rashi writes, because he ate good, he's not hungry, he's settled now, it gives him more concentration to think when you talk to him. So it's affect the way you think. So if you have an important day, you have to go to court, you have to know what to say, your life is depending on that. You don't need breakfast because you're nervous. It only makes your situation and your focus much worse. Better to relax, to eat, to feel that you're not going to be hungry until 3-4, that, you know, because it's affecting the blood, it's affecting the sugar level in the body. So obviously we see these things, they already spoke about it 2,000 years ago. Then it's, you know, help the person when he learns Torah, obviously. It helps a person to teach Torah properly. And when a person speak, Dvarav Nishma'im, it helps that what he say penetrates the hearts and the mind of the people that listens. Talmudo mitkayem beyado, what he learns is able to remember. So basically it's affecting the memory. Talmudo mitkayem beyado means whatever he learned, you come here later, he knows what he learned. Not like some people, they learn, by the time they get to the car, you ask him, tell me, do you know what the lecture tonight was on? He says something about bread. Can you tell us a little bit more? He also spoke about Moroccans and about European Jews. No, what else can you say? Listen. Nafalta alenu kaved, you fell on me too heavy. Give me a break. What? Three things you can say from 2 hours lectures? What is it? The mind is not focusing well and the memory is not working well. Of course, there's other things, like a person needs to sleep enough at night. When he finally eats, he needs all kinds of vitamins that also affect the health of a person. But I'm not talking now about everything that relates to health. We're only talking about generally the importance of Pat Shachrit right now, bread of the morning. En besaro ma'ale hevel, with hay, meaning it doesn't sweat as much. So some people that suffer from the heat and the humidity they sweat a lot, they suffer from that. You know, one thing leads to another. You sweat, then you begin to smell. It's not so comfortable. So Pat Shachrit helps the body not to sweat as much. Now comes the surprise. From all the things that I said in the list, he has desire to his wife only and not to other women. What's the connection between eating bread to this? Don't ask me. If you want, I'll send you to Rabbi Akiva grave in Tiberia. Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai in Meron, maybe you put a note there, maybe he'll send you an email from heaven to ask them what's the connection. They know the secrets. But we don't need to know the secrets and the reasons. We need to know the results. The doctor tell me, take this pink liquid. What is it? It's going to save your stomach, don't worry. Now what, is he going to sit and give me a whole speech about what he does? The molecules, the microbes, this, and he does that. No. Enzyme, it's metabolism. It gives me the whole speed. Anyway, you don't understand what they want. Give me just the bottom line. The pain will go away, will go away. 2 hours, no pain. That's all I need to know. I count on this doctor, I take it. I don't count on him, I don't take it. We count on Chazal, because they know the whole Torah, all the Torah Shebaal Peh, they know a lot of secrets, they know Kabbalah. They are the only ones actually that we can count on them with our eyes closed. What people say today on the street and what they write in the books, some things reliable, some things are not reliable. You know, but when the Chachamim spoke about something, we know we better pay attention. So, is it...
Today's bread counts?
Huh?
The bread that they have today, is it the same bread that Chazal's talking about?
Same exact bread. What do you think
that... They're saying the bread is all with the genetics and stuff, they change the bread.
Ah, you mean the... You mean the
everybody's having
the actually barley, wheat and the barley, you mean?
Yeah, they say it's not fresh bread anymore. So
when you say they changed it, you mean they made it something different? No.
Yeah, that's what
they just made it maybe grow bigger and healthier. They artificially, they do all kinds of...
GMO, genetically modified.
Yeah,
so get organic, that's all. Organic is the same as
2008. No, but I read some research that organic is not never been proven to be any better than anything. Not eggs, not meat, not vegetable, all the things, very, very good for business. But they check organics and they check regular. In some places, regular was even better than this, all this organic that you pay double.
No, he's talking about genetic.
So I don't want to mislead people, make them pay double, and in the end, they're not getting anything extra for their money. Look into it. Yes, there was actually one doctor here. She used to come. She lived very far from here. So she used to come, and if you remember, she was asked, once she asked me about organic. Remember her?
Yeah, I remember.
And she came the next week, and she argued with me a lot. Remember that back and forth? She didn't give up. But the following week, she came here, was standing right here by the door, and she told me, you know, you actually surprised me. I actually went and did a serious research about organic. She was a Hasidah of organic, very support. She said, you're actually right. I could not find one proof. Proof meaning scientific proof that organic helps in better than any other food. She couldn't find. She's a doctor, I mean, she knows what she's talking about. Bottom line, I don't want to mislead anyone. Go and check, do your own research. All right, so let's move on. So we see obviously that we're not talking about only health advice here. We're talking things that are above health. Because if a person has desire to his wife or to a different woman, how exactly the bread has to do with that? It's something more symbolic, it's something more spiritual, yeah.
Are crackers the same as bread?
Which one?
Crackers.
I already said that before. I say if a person doesn't have bread, he eats cake or crackers, this, it's also... Yes, yes. It's good. It's not as good, but bread is always better. But if he doesn't have, he can eat that instead. The next thing is, Rashi wrote, what Rashi wrote about is having desire for his wife and not to other women. Beef is a person who has thoughts that are not clean, because he eats well in the morning and is in a, you know, the food gets you in a good mood and balance the body, right? So when he goes out, it decreases desire, sexual desire, it decreases it. I guess what it is, when a person eats and is full, maybe he has less desire to make sins. It also kills the worms that are in the stomach. Many people have worms in the stomach, almost everybody. Some people have too many, that creates problems. You know, at one time, one of my little kids, the baby, had worms in his stomach. It's usually happen if the kids don't eat without washing their hands, then they can get it. I needed to buy him two pills. Guess how much each pill was? 140 or $130 each pill. Then I got it from my friend that owned a pharmacy, and his cost price $96 each pill to get rid of the worms. Did it help? Of course not. Fine. You know, but the idea is that it kills the worms inside the stomach. Also, it lower the jealousy. Most of us has some kind of jealousy inside. Some maneuver the jealousy to positive things. Some only to negative things. Person see a nice car, he's jealous with a guy. What are you jealous? It's stupid. What's to be jealous about these things? Or a watch, or a nice suit. It's very foolish to be jealous about things like this. person see a big house, beautiful, look like a museum. What are you jealous about this? The person that lives in this house, when they die, he'll eat his heart much, much harder than you. You live a lousy home, you don't miss it. A big deal, everything leaking, broken, you know, small, this. But this guy, wow, I live my $40 million home, my mansion with the gardens and the water fountain and the golf course, you know. And now it all goes up and he looks at all these things and says, wait, give me, let me say goodbye to the vase. I got it in China. This one, I bought it from Italy. Say, enough with this nonsense. He eats his heart. Also, if he has a lot of cash in his bank account, and now he just realized he died, he said to himself, look what happened. In the middle of action and business, I have to say goodbye to all this. But someone that drive a truck, give him $1,000 by the end of the week, whatever, before he even step out of the office, it's already gone. Supermarket, I owe you this one, that, I owe you what, buses, this. Finished, already the money is gone. His wife, no, the kids need sneakers. What can I do? Go to Metzios, get him something used. Why? They barely make it, so when they die, they don't miss the world. They only worry about their soul. But to miss this world, what's to miss? What's to miss my lousy car that's stuck every Wednesday on the highway? To miss the home? Nothing to miss. What's to miss what? Even his phones is from the day of Antiochus. So what is to miss? So the more fancy you live, the more you suffer when you die. You understand? So don't fall in love too much with this world. Now, what do you think? Do you think the weight of the person in the time of death affect him after or no?
Yes.
Person die overweight, person die skinny. Does it make a difference?
Yes, because yes. The worms when they eat him up.
More worms.
The answer is the heavier he is, the worse it is for him. Why? Because a part of the suffering of the soul after separated from the body is that the soul feels the worms eat the body. It's a spiritual pain for the soul. The longer it takes for the worms to finish to eat the body, the longer the soul suffers. So if a person is 45 kilo, 100 pounds, the worms finish him up in 2-3 months. But if he's 345 kilo, then it's gonna take 2 years to finish him. So the soul suffers longer, you understand? So here is an example. You can read about it in Reshit Chokhmah. I bring a lot of Kabbalah over there. The legendary Kabbalist Rabbi Eliyahu Vidash, the student of the Ramak, the Rabbi Moshe Cordovero, which was very big Mekubal in a generation of the Ari HaKadosh. The Ari gave him respect, which is the greatest Kabbalist in history, the Ari. And in his generation, the Ramak lived. And the Ari gave him respect. It shows you who he was. And this Vidash is his student, Rabbi Vidash. So we're talking the greatest name in Kabbalah. Yeah.
No, they say bread is fattening. If you want to lose weight, don't eat bread. So what do you
have? Everything is fattening, besides vegetables, some vegetables. Everything is fattening. Sugar is fattening, bread is fattening, spaghetti is fattening, rice is fattening. Fruit is also fattening. Sugar, it's either sugar or oil. Or bread, so everything is fattening.
According to the Torah, what are you supposed to do?
You have to eat very little. According to the Torah, you have to make sure every time you eat, you don't stuff your stomach. So you stay a little bit, you're not very hungry, but you always feel very light. You're not stuffed. You know, a person that goes to a wedding, especially Bukharian wedding, in one wedding he eats what he eats in several other weddings. Now, if he wrote a nice check, then he forced himself to eat more for his money. I'm joking. So I'm saying, doesn't matter. You go to the most simple wedding today, almost every wedding, regardless, Persian, Bukharian, Syrian. I one time went to Kiddush here in Shaar Etzion. I never see a wedding like that Kiddush was on Shabbat. A wedding. How much delicious food they serve over there. An amazing It's only a Shabbos Kiddush, maybe the Bar Mitzvah, I don't know what they had over there. I happened to be there in Shabbaton, I was here, I went to pray there. So how much a person can eat, there's so many delicious things and there's a strong desire for the food. The more you offer him, the more he's stuffed. The more he chokes the stomach, the more sicknesses he has. That's the whole point here. The Rambam said to leave at least a third of the stomach empty. When you get up from the chair, when you're done eating, you have to be light. You don't feel, oh, I cannot move. Open your bed, you cannot move like this. Oh, why? 3 hours just to relax from, you can't breathe, you know? Imagine this. So the idea is when the stomach is a muscle that constantly shrink and expand. Too much food falls in it, it chokes it. Think about it, the muscle. You put tons of food on it, it cannot move. It creates very, very serious problem. Now, I'm going to tell you some of the things from the Gemara. Perhaps you never heard it before. I'll give you a little bit idea what to do and not to do. So we say that it eats the worms in the stomach, takes away the jealousy, brings love, increase the love life. Well, we already said that he loves his wife than someone else, but that's not what they meant now. Now they meant it brings actual feelings. It's affecting the feeling to a person, to his wife. And remove other sicknesses. Mikan va'elach, the Gemara say, Baba Metzia, page 107. Mikan va'elach, from here on, after this list that we gave you, you should also know that it removes a lot of other sicknesses from a person. Sheneemar, It says in the Torah, "V'asiroti machala mikirbecha." I will remove the sicknesses from inside you. So internal sicknesses will be removed based on how much a person eats pat shachrit, if he makpid or not. How many sicknesses pat shachrit can save a person from? How many? The answer, 83 different sicknesses come from the mara, from the stomach, from the gallbladder, from all these organs. And all of them can be cured by eating every day bread in the morning. The bakery just doubled their businesses here in Brooklyn after tonight. Baruch Hashem. Why? To eat in the morning is good. Now, by the way, I saw, but maybe 2 weeks ago, I saw a nice research that they did. They actually said that people that eat breakfast in the morning, they lose weight faster than others, and their metabolism works a lot better. Because the whole idea of, I'm not eating anything, but I'm not losing weight, what's going on here? It's because the metabolism doesn't work, does not function, especially when you get older. It's slow. But if a person eats pat shachrit, and is also, you know, makpid to eat very little, but small snacks, small meals, not like heavy 3 big meals. No, it doesn't have to be that way. Can eat breakfast, then a little bit, and then 2 hours later a little bit. Something, little bit, little things to eat. So constantly the stomach receives little bit, little by little, and constantly it works. The whole system works better. It's very interesting because there are certain things, as long as the body functions and works a lot, the system is better. For instance, a car. If you drive your car every day, the car would last much longer than a car that you drive one day a month. If the car is standing 1 month, technically you don't do any mileage. It should stay for 50 years, this car. Well, I drive 1 day a week. 6 days it stands. That makes more damage. Why? The oil is standing. All kinds of things is happening. But when it's in a move, it works better. Also, if people leave the car for a month and they go away and they come back, usually the battery died. Even if it's good, brand new car, the battery all of a sudden is dead. Why? All kinds of things. So when a car is functioning, it works better. That's why people that go away, they give the key to the neighbor, start my car twice a week. There's something interesting. I've seen that women that did not become pregnant 10 years do not become pregnant after that. When? when they never had kids. But if they had kids, one or two, when they're younger, and then for 10 years nothing, no pregnancy, no problem. The system will always work better. The problem is when a woman never got married, never had pregnancies, nothing, and now she gets into her 40s, it reduces her chance to have kids easily. So why is it? Because the system was not working. When the system is not working, then there's something in the creation. When something is not functioning, meaning is not often get into action, then it has an effect on it. But Baruch Hashem today with the medicine and the improvement in medicine and technology and all the things that the doctors today have that we didn't have about 30 or 40 years ago, there's really not that much to worry about, because there's many things that they can do to actually increase the chance for couples to have kids when in 30 years ago they didn't even have any chance. Today in a lab, what they can do in a lab today, for instance, all kinds of things that woman's system is blocked, today they can open it up. Today they can take egg from a woman that ovulate and put it inside a woman that doesn't have it, and then take from the husband and actually make the wife pregnant when before she had no chance ever in her life to ever become pregnant. A barren woman in the old days, who would even know about eggs? Besides Chazal that spoke about those things 2,000 years ago when nobody had an idea, the Gemara spoke about twins. I have a lecture in my website, it's called Torah and Science number 2. And over there I show in a Gemara that they ask how twins are created. Back in the days, they thought that twins are created when a husband was with his wife one time, she conceived, and then he was with her again after a few days, and she became pregnant again. Which means, yeah, that's what they thought. There's no way to know. They didn't have the equipment that we have today. So they thought one seed went into one egg today. The next week, when they were together again, another seed went into another egg, and now two babies are developing in a womb, which is perfectly makes sense. You're laughing today because we know how it works. But back in the day, it makes perfect sense. What? How are two babies created? So first of all, the fact that they knew back in the day that the sperm goes into an egg, that's already a huge achievement. Remember, they didn't have microscope. But what the world didn't know, what the Chachamim knew, came from Hashem. Not that the Chachamim were scientists and sitting in the lab and checking all kinds of things. But the Chachamim say, non-identical twins is two different sperms, seeds, one and one, that went into two eggs at the same time that the husband and wife were together. Which means it's much, much more rare. Usually one goes into the egg, one. Two that will go to two eggs, its chance is much, much, much lower, by thousands of percent, but it happens. But that's two non-identical twins. How two identical twins, the same exact image created from two different eggs and two different sperms, how can it be? The answer, no. There's one seed that goes into an egg, and then the egg splits to two. And this is in a Gemara 2,000 years ago. Who knew 2,000 years ago what an egg of a woman is? Go show it, check in the whole world if somebody even knew there's such a thing. But the Chachamim wrote about it. They spoke about these things. So Baruch Hashem, this is how it was. So let's go, move on. So it says like this. Pat shachrit ma'ale lechule gufe. It's helping not only certain sicknesses, it helps the strength of the entire body. Not only that, when a person wants to be strong when he comes every day to follow the Torah of Hashem, you need to be strong. If a person is weak and sick, he can learn Torah, he cannot do chasadim. It's very, very limited. So the best interest of a person his interest is to be very strong. If a person is strong, he can be a bigger tzaddik. If he's very weak, he cannot do that much. Even to learn, after a few hours, he can't, because his body is very, very weak. So what I'm saying to you is, the obligation to keep the body healthy, it's an obligation from the Torah. That Hashem said that a person that does not watch his health and does things that damage his body, Atid liten al zet adin. He will be judged for that. If a person will come to Hashem and say, hey, what do you want from me? I had ulcer, and that's why I wasn't able to do certain mitzvot, because you got me weak, and I had problems and symptoms. The question is, why did you get the sickness to begin with? Maybe your lifestyle and the way you live caused it. If that's the case, you are 100% to be blamed. Sometimes the sicknesses come from sins. Person makes sins and Hashem punish him. It happens all the time. The Torah wrote about it a few times, not once, few times. But sometimes a person actually makes himself sick. How? By smoking a lot. Smoking causes more than 80 different sicknesses. Taking certain drugs also make damages to the body, to the brain, cannot focus, cannot think. People today, it became an epidemic. They smoke drugs, smoke all kinds of drugs. And they think, that's a light drug. All right, it's legal in some states. In America, it's even legal. The judge in a court smoke before he start. In Denver, what do you think the judge, what do you think the judge does? 40 years old judge. Before he goes in, he smokes outside in the parking. And he comes in, it's legal, it's not violating the rule. What they don't know, these people, is that smoking drugs make permanent damage to the cell in the brain. The more a person does it, the more addictive it becomes. The more years he's doing it, the more damage to his thinking. He can focus, he cannot concentrate, he has to go all the time to get up, to sit, to move. He can't. He cannot focus on one thing 2-3 hours, not to lose his concentration. 2 minutes he can't. When I used to teach Gemara in Yeshiva, all the Baalei Tshuva that came to the Yeshiva, I started to see that some of them able to think, some of them cannot think. And then I used to ask them, tell me, you went to India? How do you know? He said, I see how you think, and I know. So, but how? What's in India? I said, a lot of drugs, free, over there on the beach, right? So it makes damage to the brain already. So Rabbi, I cannot fix it now? What do you think, you can fix it or no?
No.
You can recreate cells in the brains that are burned?
Yeah, sure.
Huh? No. You know, in battery, we have computer battery. When you buy the computer first day, the battery can be good for 5 hours. A year later, maximum, 100%, it's only 2 hours. It dies after 2 hours. What happened? The first month, it was good for 5 hours usage. 2 years later, 1 hour. Then eventually, when the battery is about to be completely destroyed, 20 minutes, it's gone. Full charge, all night. 20 minutes, toot. What happened? 6 hours, 20 minutes. More and more cells in a battery are getting, they're dying over the time. You use it, again, charging. Eventually, it stops receiving the charge. Until the entire battery, 80% of the cells there do not receive charge. So the brain works the same way. What do you think? More damage a person does to his brain, later we see the results. The same thing on a hard drive, on a computer. If there are pieces in a hard drive that you cannot copy anything to, then you see things on a computer. It's very strange. It could be a scratch. The computer gets stuck. It gets delayed for 5 minutes until it moves. It shuts in the middle. All kinds of things happen. Why? When the brain has damage, everything in your life is damaged. And that's called in the Torah, me'uvat lo yuchal litkon. So there are certain things that you've destroyed, and unfortunately there's no way to fix it. So what's the solution? Not to start with these things. Not to start. You have to watch yourself healthy. Then the next thing, Rav Saadia Gaon, which very big Rav about 1,000 years ago, he said, the food is maintaining the bodies and the souls. The bodies, I understand. Why the soul? If I eat now bread or meat, how does it affect the soul? It's affect the body, I understand. But why it's affecting the soul? The answer is, if the body is not healthy, the soul also suffers. Like I said before, if a person die from sicknesses, what good is the soul? Soul cannot do anything without the body. But like you say over here, somebody said here, it also depends what you eat. Certain things that a person eat affect the soul not only physically, spiritually. Meaning if you eat things that are not kosher, it's affecting the judgment if you be righteous or wicked. It's affecting the entire spirituality of the human being. So, the Rav Saadia Gaon wrote, even though the food is maintaining the body and the souls, there's big pleasure in it. When a person eats, it's a wonderful pleasure. All different flavors, thousands of flavors. It's a great feeling. Food easily can become addictive, just like heroin or many other things, or cigarettes, things that people are very addicted. You see some kids, you take away the food from them, look how they react. Some kids, all day they talk about food. They decide where to go based on what food gonna be there. What's gonna be there? They serving pizza? Pizza. Chocolate donuts. Chocolate donuts, I go over there. He makes the decision based on what food they'll give him, chocolate or pizza, or, you understand? So you see, everything in their life is around the candy, the ice cream, the pizza. How do you get kids to come to learn? They don't wanna come learn. You tell them there's gonna be Coca-Cola and pizza. Everyone comes. Why? Two slices of pizza and one can of Coke. You got the kid to come and agree to learn Torah. A lot of the learning programs all over America, that's how they bait the people to come. Because if you don't serve them anything, even with adults it's like that. When they make a flyer and they write sushi will be served, there's always double amount of people. Like they never saw sushi in their life. They see on the air, on the flyer, sushi will be served, double.
Remember about
the Harry Burr. Unbeliever, you remember? All right, let's move on. It says like this. Next thing. When a person stuffed himself with food, first reaction is ve'ichbedu ha'evarim. His organs become heavy. Everything slow and heavy. His head is partially dizzy. The eyes are burning. He feels that the eyes are not as functioning as before. The question is why? Why does it cause the person such reaction? The best thing to see that is on Shabbat after the Chulent. Soon as the people finish the Shabbos meal, which is the heaviest meal of the week, they move from the chair into the couch. 3 minutes later, the mouth opens up. And then the carpenter shop opens up. And the snoring begins. And then you have another one join the couch, and another one join the couch. And another one joined the couch. All of a sudden, you have a whole line of people. They fall asleep. Thank you.
Welcome.
Shandi, the heat is killing you. So the next thing is, why a person that learns after Shabbat in a meal deserves the biggest reward of the week in learning? They say, do you want to know if a person really loves Torah or not? Go check on Shabbat after the Chulent if he sits to learn or he goes to sleep. Why? Because it's very hard to focus. Now, why the food makes a person unable to learn? That even when he opens the Gemara, 2 minutes later, he snores on it. Why? The answer is, when a person stuffed his stomach with lots of food, the body must send more and more blood to that area to digest that food. The blood has to go there. The blood is the energy, the life of a person. So the more blood goes to the stomach, the less blood you have where it's necessary. In the head, in other parts of the body. So you're half numb. You go to sleeping mode. Because all the soldier went to go to where the battle is. Where the battle right now is inside the stomach. So the soldier from all over ran to one city, which is the stomach. Every other city is empty now. No army. Why? Everybody is fighting over there. That's why a person cannot even open up his eyes. He feels that his whole head is very heavy. Even to open up his eyes, he can. The best example for that is on a weekend seminar. After the big meal, there's always a lecture. It's wonderful because you see 400-300 people in front of you, 200 of them sleep. So Baruch Hashem, there's still 50 that their eyes are open. If they listen or not, that's another issue. But their eyes are still open. I didn't say anything bad about sleeping. I just described that when the stomach is too heavy, a person that wants to stay up cannot stay up. It makes him very, very tired. He cannot learn. He cannot do anything. Also, when a person eats, it's not good to jump right away and run and do physical action. Up to half an hour, it's good to let the body rest. You're in a rush, 20 minutes. Still, 20 minutes, don't get up right away and begin to walk or to run. It's not good. So you let the body begin to digest some of the food, then you can get up and not to run and not to do hard exercise. Same thing after intimate relation, not to do any physical work right after, to wait 20 minutes, 30 minutes, to let the blood circulate good again in the body before you run and jump and run. Same thing when you get up in the morning. The body was a few hours not moving in bed, in a static position. The alarm went off. You're missing your flight. You jump right away. The blood is circulating in our body. It creates problems. You understand? So that's why a person has to be, when he gets up, to sit 10 seconds, not to move, to let the body, the blood begin to circulate once you're sitting down quietly on a bed before you get up. Before you begin to run, even if you're in a rush, that 10 seconds won't kill you. But you let the blood first move slowly before you jump, and there's a sharp stirring of the blood in the body, creates problems, and later can create serious health issues. Next thing, it says like this. Certain food, there are food, usually like garlic, onion, spicy peppers. It creates the body to heat another degree or two. When the body is hotter, it creates a man of all kinds of sins that he doesn't want to happen to him. Usually the sperm of the man is produced faster and more when the body temperature rises. That's why they said to the single boys, you don't want to waste seed and make sins. Don't eat garlic. Don't eat spicy food. Don't eat onions because they boil the system inside. And then eventually when there's too much sperm in the body, eventually it has to come out. So the one of the enemies of that sin is eating hot things. So here is an example how eating specific thing can cause a person to make sins that he's not interested to. This is another, that's also increase the desire for sins. Certain foods, when a person eats it, almost forcing himself to go make a sin. He has to be careful what he eats, what he doesn't eat. Next thing is, it says, how the person reacts when he drinks alcohol. Alcohol also, if a person drinks very little alcohol per day, a little bit, no problem. Some even say it's a little bit healthy. But you know what happens. Usually it's more and more and more, and then it begins to create a lot of problems. So he writes over here, we know that today they say that red wine, red dry wine, it's good for the heart. But everybody understand, if you drink a little glass per day, it's fine. You begin to drink finished bottles, of course it's not good, it kills the livers. So too much alcohol, the immediate effect is on the liver. It makes very serious damages to the way this body functions. And eventually it can kill the liver, and a person needs to replace it. And if he doesn't have new liver, which is very hard to get, he dies. There are people who die because of alcohol. It started as a glass here and there, and eventually became an addiction, until the liver cannot function anymore, and it kills the liver. Next thing. There are secrets in the food that we eat. Since everything in this creation, it's all the reincarnations of the soul. Usually a soul leaves a body and goes into a new body of a baby. Someone with free will died, someone with free will were born. His name is to be Yitzchak, now his name become Moshe. It's the same soul, and then it can be a woman, sometimes a Kohen, sometimes it's Levi. That's the regular incarnation, from normal to normal. But sometimes it goes from normal to not normal, Down syndrome, brain damage, autistic kids, things like this, that the people don't have free will. Sometimes it gets that a person comes back in an animal, in a sheep, in a cow, in a dog, in a crow, in a snake. Sometimes in pure animals, kosher, sometimes in non-kosher animal. There's obviously reasons for that. It's no coincidence. If he comes back in a crow, or in a rabbit, or in things like that, that means Hashem takes the divine soul of that person that was wicked in his previous life and attach it to the nefesh of that animal. Not that the person suffers because the dog is cold now on the street and people kick him or he's hungry. No, the soul doesn't feel that. If a person's soul was reincarnated into a spirit, into a nefesh, of a dog. Whether this dog is a king and they take care of him in a beautiful mansion and he has a servant and they feed him well and he has a private doctor, or whether it's a dog homeless on the street that is freezing and walking and have rabies, the soul doesn't feel any different. The suffering of the soul, no matter what dog you connected to, once you connected to a nefesh of a dog, it's a spiritual suffering, not physical suffering like most people think. The suffering is not physical. Oh, some people would love to be this dog. Look what great life he has. Nothing to worry about. Everyone takes care of him. Everyone loves him. He has a wonderful place to live. He eats well. Doesn't have to work 30 years for the mortgage. So his life looks pretty good. Some people say, you know what? I wouldn't mind to be that dog or cat. But they don't understand that we are not talking about their physical condition. You can never see. We're not talking about their physical condition. We are talking about spiritual condition. Usually the way it works, Hashem takes a divine soul and attach it to a divine nefesh. So it goes together as a beautiful system. However, if it's a punishment, that soul goes into a nefesh, not divine, nefesh of a dog, of an ox, of a snake. That nefesh is impure. The soul is divinely pure. Divine and pure and impure connects together. Horrible suffering for the soul. Horrible. Spiritual. We don't understand that spiritual suffering, but it's a horrible suffering. It's even worse than go to Gehenna. The suffering of being reincarnated in a dog or all these animals, it's even worse than people who goes to Gehenna for X amount of time. Usually, the biggest sins in the Torah creates reincarnation in few specific animals, such as crow, the raven, a snake, a dog. This is very bad reincarnations. Sometimes a person is being reincarnated in plants, trees, fruits. You can peel an apple, you make a bracha, you don't know that you just released the soul that was in this apple. You eat the apple, some of the apple go to the waste, the soul was released, finished. The soul goes back to heaven. Wow. That means the time that Hashem decree on a soul to be reincarnated in this world is over. Sometimes a person is reincarnated in raw material. Usually, the shuls, the synagogues, is full of souls in the world. We cannot see it. There are people who can see it. I know one woman in Queens, she can see spiritual things. She sees things. She sees letters on her forehead of people, just like the Ari HaKadosh wrote in his book, Ruach HaKodesh. He said combination of the letters, 22 Hebrew letters, which is the DNA of the world. And every human being, these letters on his forehead. But not everybody can see it. Only very, very spiritual, holy people can see it. Understand?
What are the biggest sins?
Biggest sins in the Torah? I'll give you the top few ones. Biggest ones, let's start. Not necessarily in the right order, but I'll tell you which one are the worst. Mechalel Shabbat, violating Shabbat, worshipping idols, not necessarily statues.
People.
Worship his rabbi, worship a dead rabbi, worship a tree, worship the stars, worship the moon, all different kinds of worshiping. Worshiping money also can be. Basically giving anything besides Hashem a power, it's already fall into this category of Avodah Zara.
Even fearing somebody.
Fearing is a different story. I mean, sometimes a person can kill you. You fear him. It's a natural reaction. That's not idol worshiping. We are now more talking about saying that this person has independent divine influence on the world, which means if a person can become holy by learning Torah, yes, that's true. But making a person like a little god, if he wants, that's what would happen. If he doesn't want, if he wants me to get married, it will happen. If he doesn't want me to get married, it won't happen. It's already falling into idol worshiping. If a person comes to a grave of a very big rabbi and pray to him to help him, which means he say, please help my son to get married. Please help my daughter to have a kid. Please help me in my sickness. Please help my wife. Please, please, please. He's talking to him. There's a 100% idol worshiper. 100%, not 99.9, 100% like the Christians and the Buddhists and all the rest.
Even ancestors, tzaddikim?
Even to Moshe Rabbeinu. So why people go to graves? Not, God forbid, to pray to the rabbis. To say, in the merit of the righteous rabbi that is buried here, please accept my prayer. You're talking to Hashem, not God forbid to him. Many Jews in this generation, it becomes an epidemic. They forgot Hashem. They remember Hashem in the back of their mind, but all they're aiming is to that tzaddik over here. And they begin to spread all kinds of nonsense and brainwash everybody that if you don't believe to their tzaddik, you have nothing in your life, and you cannot have Olam Haba, and your tshuva won't help you, and if you don't believe in him, and if you don't go to his grave, you're wicked. They make up a new Torah, new Judaism.
You ask the tzaddik to help Hashem listen to you.
You can only say to the tzaddik, tishtadel ba'adi b'shamayim. If you have a power to talk to Hashem for me, then yes, like going to a lawyer, ask him to speak to the judge, no problem. Or going to a doctor, asking him to cure you when you know the cure is in the hand of Hashem. But Hashem gave you permission to go to the doctor to cure or not to cure.
They can do it on themselves, by themselves too.
They can do it by themselves too, yes. So, like I say, giving a power to someone, counting on him instead of running to Hashem, it falls into this idol worshiping. So, Chalel Shabbat, idol worshiping, sleeping with a woman in her period, that after her period she never went to the mikveh. That's Nida, even if she now doesn't get her period for 15 years already. She stopped having it when she was 45. She's now 60. She said, what period are you talking about? I'm not a young girl. You know, I'm a grandma already.
All she has to do is go to me.
All she had to go one more time. After the last period, she has to go one more time, and then she pure for the rest of her life. Mm-hmm. She didn't go. Her husband, every time he touched her, it's a bigger sin than a murder. Wow. worse than sleeping with his own mother. So very, very big, very, very big sin. Huge sin, huge. One of the worst, and the soul gets cut. Hashem cuts those souls, the man and the woman. So that's one of the worst sins in the Torah. One more very bad sin in the Torah is being gay. It's also death penalty and also karet to the soul. Double, two of the worst penalties in the Torah for gays and mechallel Shabbat, equal. Stoning and the soul gets cut. So being gay, it's a very, very big sin. You may ask, but some people born like that, some people later chose to be like that. Some people can't control it. Well, can't. So what do you think? I'm a religious man. Do you think I want to be like that? So what's the answer? He's right. Some people have harder desire than others. Some, they chose it for whatever reason. They were with me, man. They have kids. They've been married. Everything was fine. One day they decide to do it. Rashi writes, when you become parutz, immorality, you become, you go above the red line, then women already is not exciting enough for you to make sins with them. It gets to people to do horrible things, which is against the law of nature, which is the laws of God. So every day of their life, they actually betray the creator of the world. He made rules, and they go against him and rebel against him. Now, what's the difference between somebody who was born like that with this desire since he's a young kid and someone who later chose it? Obviously, someone that chose it is a lot worse. But we, as Jews, don't have permission to move one inch from what the Torah said. And when we see in the Torah that somebody that was born with this desire and someone that chose that later, they both get death penalty and they both get cut. So even though one is a bigger criminal than the other, both of them gets cut. So we see from here that even the one who was born with that is still a very big criminal. Otherwise Hashem wouldn't say to execute him if it wasn't in his hand. Now you may ask me, but still there is a difference. The answer is, a gay man that has it since he's a child, he has this desire and he can't control it, can happen to women also. Their desire to their own kind of people, men to men, women to women, it's more or less the same desire from man to woman or woman to a man, which is normal according to nature. So if a religious boy is in yeshiva now, he's 20, 21, 24, 27, learning and he doesn't find his shidduch, he's not allowed to go with women, can't go to class, cannot meet girls. So he's already now has desire to women 10 years and he cannot get married. He has this problem, but he doesn't have permission. The Torah never says if you cross age 30, I understand how many years you can be without a woman. So up to 30, try to be. If by 30 I did not get you married, I give you a discount. There's no such thing in the Torah. And what do you think? Hashem didn't know that people would live in such a filthy generation like today, that everyone is naked, there's no dignity, no respect, no nothing. He knew that, right? And he knew there's going to be so many thousands and more than a million Baalei Tshuva that their mind is corrupted from all the nonsense that they've seen in their life, and they have strong desire to those sins. And he knew all that, and he still did not move one tiny inch from the law and the punishments. Right? Even though 2,000 years ago it was much easier to keep your eyes. You don't have nothing to see. All women cover with a tent. Today it's not the case. So what do we see from here? So from here we see that is a very, very big crime. Now you know what the sad part is? That people that would listen to this lecture tomorrow, many of them will get angry. Why they get angry? Let's be honest for a second with ourselves. Somebody comes and tells you, I hate you, you ugly, you this, you that, you. I understand why you get upset, because that's his personal opinion about you and he's putting you down. Maybe, he's causing you damn, whatever the case may be. But if a person comes read to you from the book of God, what God is saying about you, not him, is not a factor here, b'chlal. Why can't people become a little bit more mature and a little bit more clever and say, this speaker, it's not my problem. My problem is the Torah. Now the question is, the Torah is from God or not? If I admit that it's from God, why am I getting upset at the rabbi that tell me the truth in my face? Why? I should tell him, Rabbi, thank you very much. It's not pleasant to hear, and now I understand my situation, but thank you for telling me the truth. At least I know the truth. I don't want to live in illusion all my life. For instead of appreciating it, instead of sending him a beautiful letter, thank you, no, thank you for enlightening my eye, they write you a piece of, I don't want to tell you what, and all kinds of curses, you should drop dead, your children should die. That's what they write. I get a lot of those.
Wow.
For what do I get it? For things like that, that I read what Hashem says in the Torah. So the curses that they curse me, it's for me or for Hashem?
Hashem.
They curse Hashem, they don't curse me. But they don't want to cross the line, say, writing it in the internet against Hashem. There are people who does that also. Yeah. They don't have any limits. So it's like someone who just got lo aleinu cancer, and he begins to curse his doctor. Doctor told you your situation. What you? Doctor only tell you what the law of nature is. Cancer kill. The doctor wants to save you. He wants to help you what to do, what not to do, what to eat, what not to eat. What are you cursing him? Why are you wishing him to die?
The messenger. Shoot the messenger.
Yeah, you understand? People do not know to distinguish between the address of their problem. Instead of blaming themselves and understand they have an issue with Hashem and the Torah, they get angry at the mailman that delivered them the letter. What are you getting? The IRS is your problem, not the mailman. You understand? I repeated it 1,000 times. You think it helps? Tomorrow the curses will still come. But we should never be afraid or hesitate. Feel bad for Jews that lose their olam haba by the way they talk. That's sad.
But you asked, why are they angry? Not who are they angry at. Why are they angry at you saying that?
They're angry because they want to live in a certain desire and the Torah forbids it. Now, for them, giving up their desire, meaning to lose all the pleasure of life. You understand?
There's more than that. What if somebody who's not gay has a friend that's gay?
Yeah.
And the person who's not gay is angry at you because they care about their friend.
Right. That's also happened.
Yeah.
It can happen. It can be, like you say, brothers, it could be siblings.
Human being. They have feelings. Right. They're human.
The question is like this. I agree that if I say that and it's not in the Torah, they have all the rights to be angry. Still don't have the rights to curse and to be lowlifes because people have to keep certain dignity. But at least they have the right to get upset. Oh, you're lying to me. You're telling me things in the names of Hashem that Hashem never said. Then, believe me, I would have full sympathy to them, right? But when it's written in the Torah so many times and every fool knows about it, take any guy on the street here. Hey, excuse me, Mr. Whatever. Come, tell me, you learned in your life, do you think in the book of God it's permitted to be gay or not? Every guy here on Coney Island Avenue, who would tell you it's permitted?
Especially in Texas,
or Arkansas, everywhere you go, people know it. Arabs know it, many knows it. It's nothing new, it's no secrets here. But they still wants to ignore the truth and the facts and to take their anger in someone. They only don't know that by the way they react like that, they triple their punishment. Mm-hmm. Up to now, the punishment was one thing, the actual sin. Now you're cursing someone who teach the Torah of Hashem, it's even a bigger punishment than that. Mm-hmm. Do you know what was the punishment of JC?
His punishment?
Yeah, do you know what his punishment? Unculus, the nephew of Titus, made seance. He called 3 wicked people. He called his uncle Titus. He said, should I convert or not? He told him, no. He said, what's your punishment for making problems for the Jews? He told him, every day they burn me. They take my ashes. They spread it in 7 different rivers. Then they collect my ashes, collect it all back, and they burn me again, and they collect, and they burn, and they collect. That's his punishment, Titus. Then he called Bilam, the chief prophet of the Goyim in the time of Moshe Rabbeinu. He said to Bilam, who is important in Olam Haba? He said, the Jews. He said, what punishment you got? He said, because I was sleeping with my donkey. That's what he was doing. So they gave me the worst punishment. I don't even want to say it on camera. Go to the Gemara, you see. Then he went to JC. And he asked JC, J.C. Ben Miriam. He asked J.C. He said to him, who is important in Olam Haba? He told him the Jews. He said, should I convert? He's the only one out of the three that say yes. Titus and Bilam say, no, it's hard to be a Jew. What do you need this headache? Go against them, at least you have this world, because someone that goes against them has to be important. So God would make you important because he doesn't put his children in the hand of a nobody. Always by a big empire. So Titus said to his nephew, Unculus, when you go against them, maybe you'll be somebody important. Same thing, Bilam. But J.C. didn't speak like this. J.C. said you should convert. And you have to understand, we as Jews, it's against our agenda to tell what I just tell you. We would prefer to make J.C. not 99% wicked, 101% wicked. While we cannot move from the truth, whether we like the truth, whether it helps us, whether it's against us, whether it makes my agenda not as strong, cannot move one inch. Don't mix your personal feeling and plans and what you want to achieve. That should be out of the picture. When it comes to the book of God, you don't move left and right. First, this is the truth. By telling you the truth, I may pay a price, but I have to tell you the truth. Truth is above everything. So what's going on? J.C., believe it or not, he gave him a good recommendation. He told him, yes, you should convert. So he asked him what punishment you got, and he said they take all the waste. There's a place with a big pool, and there's boiling, there's burning, and that's where I'm getting burned inside that waste. He asked him why. He told him because the Torah says someone who makes fun at rabbis and disrespect them, not to talk about cursing them or hit them or all the other things, that's a million times worse even. Just disrespect them. You understand? Call him with his first name. He gets inside on purpose. He doesn't rise. He speaks Lashon Hara about him, ruin his reputation, etc. All these things. Somebody like that, Nidon Betzo'ar Otachat. See in the Gemara. It's written clearly over there. Amalig, I'm telling you word by word in Hebrew. Amalig al divrei chachamim nidon betzorar otachat. And now I want to tell you something. J.C. disrespected the rabbanim because he did not listen to everything they say. But I want you to know that in the New Testament, when they bring all kinds of things that supposedly said, it's written over there, no one is allowed to move any a bit left or right from what the rabbi is saying. Because the rabbis are inherited the chair of Moses. No one is allowed to move. No one. So technically, if he said it or not, we never know because the Christian makes up a lot of stories. They're very good with that. The one thing we do know, that because in his lifetime, he made himself a cult, and he did not respect enough the Chachamim. And this is only assuming, again, look, what I'm telling you right now, you have to know one thing. There is two J.C. in a history. One, what the Christian talks about. One could be somebody else. It was a popular name, Yeshua in Hebrew, Yud Shin Vav Ayin, not Yehoshua with Hey. Yeshua, it's the helper of Moshe Rabbeinu, his assistant, Yehoshua ben Nun. Yeshua, back today nobody calls himself after him by his name. But back in the days it was a popular name, popular Hebrew name. It could be another wicked one that the Gemara speaks about. Why? The reason is, even though both stories are very, very similar, if you know the date, there are 150 years different between the J.C. that mentioned in the Gemara to the J.C. that the Christian speaks about. I said, after reviewing all the evidence, nobody will ever prove that the Christian J.C. ever existed. There's no solid proof to that. Stories and stories. There's no even not, you don't have a proof that he, for instance, there is a proof Napoleon existed. Even though I didn't see him, I'm willing to hold the Torah and swear. There's millions of evidence about him. He was midget with a hat like that, Bonaparte, Italian, French. There is a story how he ended up his journey in Russia and the Russian ripped them apart. All this history, it spreads all over the world. You cannot deny it. It's like trying to deny that there was no September 11. Right. It never happened. Who's going to take you serious? But about JC, somebody came and told the story. You want to believe it, fine. You don't want to believe it, fine. 50-50 right away. Nobody ever saw him. That's why I always say to people who tell me, this Christian missionary claims that he died and he saw JC and that's why he became religious. I always tell them, ask him how JC look. They all say long hair and a goatee. I say, how did I know? Nobody ever saw his face. Somebody in Brazil made a statue. That's how, and everybody believes it's JC. How do you know it's JC? Nobody ever saw his picture. We don't know how Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai looked, even though we have thousands of books that speaks about him and his life. But nobody knows how he looked. We do not have any idea how Rabbi Akiva looked. We have no idea about anyone in the Gemara how he looks. We don't even have an idea how Rashi looks. It was only 900 years ago. There's not one Jew in the world that doesn't know Rashi. Even the Reform heard about him. Everybody knows Rashi. Nobody knows and nobody has any idea how he looks. You understand? The maximum we know how people look is 300-400 years back in history. From actually painting that was reserved. Okay. Someone just, you know, paint and it was reserved.
When you said about the
Chafetz Chaim, you know Chafetz Chaim was only 100 years ago in Radin. Everywhere in the world you go, you see a picture of Chafetz Chaim with two peos, beard, Hasidish, long beard. It's not the real Chafetz Chaim. Here. I always claim that. 10 years ago I said, that's not the Chafetz Chaim. The real Chafetz Chaim was shorter, a little bit chubbier, and he had not such long beard. His beard was a little puffy. He didn't grow so long, and he had this casquette, this barrette hat. It looks different than the picture you see in every home. And now a movie came out a month ago, exactly like the one and only picture of the Chafetz Chaim that was taken in 1933 by the New York Times or New York Post, and they made an article about him. You see a little short man sitting on a chair next to his horrible, lousy home, and they wrote in the newspaper 80 years ago, the greatest rabbi in the world, come and see where he lives. that was the Kiddush Hashem. Not greed, churches, palaces, antique rugs, everything imported from here, imported from there, and the public has to pay for his pleasure. No, doesn't want anything from the public. I'm going to live a very simple life and focus on spirituality. That's, by the way, one way to know how high spiritually the person is. If he cannot live without the luxury, that means he's on a very low spiritual level. Very, very low. Almost zero. He has almost no spirituality in him. The higher the spirituality in the life of a person is, the less he cares about materialism. Someone that is in a high level of spirituality, you offer him a diamond, he would laugh at you. I mean, diamond? What am I going to put a piece of glass? I need it for. Give him the money, he's going to use the money to do mitzvot. It's a different story. Tell him there's a diamond, but you cannot sell it. You have to wear it. Do you know one holy person that would want it? A gift. So what am I going to do with that? It's a shame for me to walk with that diamond. What am I going to do with that? He won't understand what you want. I'll give you a Persian antique rug. He tell it to the Chafetz Chaim. He would look at you like you lost your mind. What am I going to do with this rug? Persian antique rug. I went to somebody. He told me he opened his cabinet. And he had lots of bottles of wine. He gave it to me and said, this is for the holiday, the Rosh Hashanah, Pesach maybe. Appreciate, enjoy it. It's $1,000 a bottle. I told him, you know what? Don't give it to me. Give it to someone who knows how to appreciate it. For me, I drink $5 bottle, and I drink $5 or $10, and I drink this $1,000 bottle. I won't tell the difference. You know? Give it to those French that go like this. Ooh, ooh la la. They already know everything. You know the history of this wine. Let them appreciate it. What do you give it? Same thing with the whiskey. Some people, they can tell the difference. $300 bottle, $40 bottle. Right away, they know the difference. Most people don't know the difference. If you don't believe me, take a blue label bottle, put regular whiskey inside, and give it to them, and you see how the expert, wow, that's really good blue label. Very good. Why? It's all in the head, yes. But some people can tell the difference. Yes.
Question number one. I thought there are many, many Tamidei Chachamim that I listened to over the years was, you know, it's a tremendous amount of Torah, but they live very materialistic. And they love money.
Sometimes it's so their wives, not them.
No, no, it's not the wife. Can't keep letting the wife. They drive fancy cars. They got beautiful homes. And I know personally, they know a serious amount of Torah. So you can say that they're spiritually low. I mean, I don't know.
Yes.
But they come and give these speeches, they know so much Torah.
Tell me, I want to ask you a question. You didn't see in the history people that knew so much Torah and they did the worst sin that the Torah speaks about? The worst. Like,
sure.
Like death penalty with no issue. There's plenty of those. You have to know one thing. Sometimes a person is in a high level of spirituality in his life, but then after 2 or 3 years, he goes down. A person can be in high spiritual level while he's learning in yeshiva. There's nothing else to do besides learning, so he keeps elevating his soul. But as soon as he goes into business, one day in Manhattan, he loses 20 years in yeshiva by what he sees on the street and how people talk and how they dress. It takes away all your holiness right away. Now, if you're there for half a year, what do you think you're going to want? You want the same houses like all these people there. You also care all of a sudden about the chandelier because that's all you hear about. You hear about the suits, you hear about the shoes, you hear about the new Mercedes. You constantly hear people talks about this, and the wedding has to be like that. Don't move. Move over here. Don't move like this. The flower has to be in place. He becomes like them. When a person moves to Sodom and Gomorrah, a year later, he becomes Lot. What do you think?
Rabbi Akiva was rich. And Rabban Gamliel.
Rabbi Akiva became rich in the end of his life. Most of his life he was poor.
Rabban Gamliel was rich. Yehuda Anasi was rich. And I can continue with the names until we're going to finish the lecture.
No, but the Gemara say clearly, Rabbi Yehuda Anasi, before he died, he had a very big house. And everything was planned. And the Gemara say, the Gemara say, he picked up his 10 fingers and he said to Hashem, you know, all my life, I did not enjoy even once from this world. So the Gemara say, how? He's the richest guy in Israel, the president, rich. His table is full of all best foods. Every, you know, so why? Everybody enjoy from him, and he didn't care about anything. You see, sometimes a person, he has what you say, a big car or expensive car or a nice big home, but for different reasons. He wants to have 10, 20 guests every Shabbat. Holidays, people come, he wants to make a shul in the basement, he needs a big home, it's like half a motel. He needs a good kitchen with good utilities because they cook a lot, there's a lot of children, they need something good, not something that will break every 6 months. The question is this makes him happy or not? When he bought a new fridge, his wife, it will make her happy. Wow, what a fridge, the oven, wow. But the man, does he care about this thing? If yes, something is not right. If a man goes and bought a $50,000 watch and he stands like this by the mirror, like this, he's a very low spiritual level. And I don't care how much Torah I learn. This is a reality, man.
He doesn't care. Obviously, he wouldn't buy anything. Because why would people buy anything like this?
Sometimes people get gifts.
I know, no, not gifts, because you're saying buy. So if I don't care, I wouldn't buy. That's number one. Number two, buy Gemara. Can you be a Ben Torah and at the same time have some money? I'm talking about luxury things, Mercedes, watches.
You completely misunderstood anything I said here tonight. I never came here and said that it's a problem to be rich. You never heard this from me. I only say it's a problem to be addicted to materialism. That's all I've been saying for the last hour. You can be a billionaire, a millionaire, do the right things with your money. Don't invest it on stupid things.
Not to be addicted to the material world. That's the question.
That's
not rich.
Yes.
Not to be addicted by Gemara.
Yes, allowed.
You can be.
Allowed.
Allowed and allowed, but can it happen?
It happens all the time.
Yes, right?
Yes.
So you can be Ben Torah and be.
All the big rabbis become rich. Because everybody buys their books all over the world. Do you know how many millions of dollars Chacham Ovadia made from his books being sold to every house in the world? It's enough, he takes $3 a book, and there's more than 3 million books he sold, that's right there, $9 million. That's before all the other incomes that he may had. A job here and a job there, and the chief rabbi of Israel, and the chief rabbi of Tel Aviv, and the head of this, and the head of that. There's money come from all over when you're big Talmid Chacham. But how did he live? sat and learned Torah all his life and did not care nothing. And you know what? Now they're finding out that all his salaries and the money that was coming to him, everything he was giving out to the poor people that used to come and cry to him. Everything was giving out. He didn't leave to his children that much cash. They don't need, because it's enough, the 70,000 books that he has in his house. Technically, a book worth $20, $30. But if you see that Rav Ovadia wrote a few words in it, already it became $100,000. You understand? All you have to do is keep it 30, 40 years. And the longer you have it, if you know, if somebody has a book, the Chatam Sofer wrote 200 years ago. He sold it for $1.4 million with the handwriting of Chatam Sofer. The person that bought it broke the pages, sold each page separately, and he made $3 million. Bought it for $1.4 million, made $3 million. This is an everyday business in the world. People get one page of the Rambam was written for $1 million 20 years ago in Sotheby's. $1 million and it has holes in it, just the handwriting of the Rambam. Now, you understand, do you know in the Vatican, under the Vatican, there are seven floors of Jewish treasure, trillions of dollars. The menorah of Beit HaMikdash, the trumpets, all the big holy books from 1,000 years ago, they robbed it. They robbed it on the Holocaust, they robbed it when Titus took everything to Rome. It's constantly 2,000 years of robbing the Jews, taking everything they have, one pogrom after the other, eventually everything gathered under there. There's one rabbi in Manhattan that visited there. Somebody smuggled him in.
Why can Israel sue them?
You know what? One time, we had a plan to bring the menorah from there to Muncie. Everything was already planned. One Persian guy paid $6 million. He gave $1 million down, and he was supposed to pay another $5 million when the menorah would be delivered to the port. Somebody in the Vatican, Italian man. I've seen Rabbi Aderet, I was in his home, I saw all the stamps, all the signatures, all the agreement, everything. When the Israeli chief rabbi somehow found out from Italy, he went to them, that the menorah of Beit HaMikdash is about to be sent to Monsi, to a rabbi's backyard, to hide it under the ground when Mashiach come. Who stopped it? They went to the Vatican, check in a history, to meet right away the Pope, the previous Pope, and they told him if the menorah will be released, it must be released to Jerusalem,
wow,
not to America. As soon as they discovered that it was found out, they canceled the plan. If the chief rabbis would not go there, we would have now the menorah 2 minutes walking from my home in the backyard of Rabbi Aderet Shul. It was already planned how the moving company would go, middle of the night, get the menorah, bring it. Somebody with a tractor in Monsi come, dig a big hole. Nobody would know about it. Maybe 4 or 5 people knew about it. I was supposed to be buried there, waiting, menorah, Mashiach come, say, you don't have to make new menorah. We have a menorah. Now we have now, Baruch Hashem, a red cow already. We had a menorah, now we had a red cow. Everything would look beautiful. There's a red cow next to Lakewood now. Kosher red cow. One expert rabbi went to examine the cow. And the interesting thing now, the video is running everywhere on YouTube now. The interesting thing with the red cow is, the red cow has to be maximum up to 3 years old. And to know for sure that it's a red cow, it has to be 2 years old. Now it's 2 years and 1 month. Which means we have an 11-month period that everything can happen. All of a sudden, Mashiach comes. Now, the interesting thing is that the Jew, a farmer Jew next to Lakewood, non-religious, no yarmulke, he has a cow and an ox, black, not red. They had the baby, black and black, gave birth to a blonde kid. What's the odds?
Red
completely. Not one black hair. They checked. They went to check. Two blacks, cow and ox, black completely. They showed the parents. Gave birth to a red calf. And the interesting thing here is that somebody already offered this Jew $1 million and he refused. He say, it's not mine. if God gave it to me, I will have to hand it to Mashiach. Look at the video, very big Kiddush Hashem. This Jew, he say, if you don't give God's gift to someone. God gave you a gift, you don't sell it. So he said, when Mashiach come, I'll give it to him. No money, I don't want money for it.
What do you need that for? What is it for?
You must need, without it, you cannot do anything in Beit HaMikdash. You need to slaughter it. You have to burn everything and mix it with water from Jerusalem, from the Shiloach, and some other ingredients. And then you splash all the Kohanim. Itzi Kohen, Avi Kohen, Moshe Kohen, Avram Kohen, all the Kohanim comes. And you splash it on them and you purify them, because all people in the world are in a certainty, in a status of dead impurity. When you touch a dead body, you become impure for the rest of your life. There's no way to get out of it. The only way to get out of it is to have the water with the ashes of the red cow. That's the only thing that can take that impurity out of you. And we didn't have it for 2,000 years, since the last temple. We didn't have. There's 9 red cows in the history. Supposedly this is the 10th one. So we are very, very close.
Out of all the places in the world to be born, it's interesting, it's right next to Lakewood.
Next to Mamash, walking distance from Lakewood.
It's 2 years old. How come it just come in there?
Huh?
No, it's been around for
over. It's been around already for more than a year. Now it's becoming perfect.
Two questions. If a person does tshuva, will they not be reincarnated into an animal or a plant?
If a person made tshuva in his world and Hashem forgave him, he doesn't need to be reincarnated at all. Not even as a regular person, unless if he has things to complete. Sometimes Hashem reincarnates a person for his own good. Why? Because he became religious age 60. Then he died 75. He only had 15 years. He didn't achieve a lot, not learn enough Torah. So Hashem sends him to another round, but this time he's born already in religious environment. And the parents put him in yeshiva, and he learned 30, 40, 50 years, and now Hashem takes him on the next time in a much higher level, because in a previous life he made tshuva. He didn't need to come back here to suffer. He only came back here to collect more. You understand? Sometimes a person reincarnated not for himself, to help the generation. When Hashem sees there's nobody to lead the generation, he sends a very high soul to the world. The soul doesn't need to come here. A soul like Rav Eliashiv or Rav Ovadia or other tzaddikim, they didn't really need to come here. If they were righteous like they were now before, what reason they had to come here? The reason sometimes Hashem sends a person here is to help us to lead the generation. So I just want to finish the list that you say. Ask me about the war scene. So I started, I say gay, yeah. Married woman. Having relation with a married woman is actually the worst than murder. And almost impossible to do tshuva for that.
Almost
impossible.
How do you do it?
Very, very hard to do. Very hard to do. Okay, what more? Sex crimes also. Relative, brother and sister, parents with children. All the forbidden relationships, very big crimes. So this is, I gave you eating chametz and Pesach. It's a very, very big crime. We are now 3 days before Pesach, drinking beer, eating spaghetti, eating mayonnaise with vinegar that made from wheat inside. It's very common. So those are the, that's very big. There's other crimes that are not so relevant to our time. For instance, to go inside Kodesh HaKodashim. We don't go inside where the mosque is, where Beit HaMikdash used to be. We don't eat chalev today. It's very, very rare. There's also Isurei Karet, very big sin, but it doesn't apply so much to our time. But the list that I gave you applies. Also, eating in Yom Kippur is a very big crime. So here you go. I gave you about 10 very bad crimes in the Torah. Marry a Goya, according to the Zohar, is the biggest sin in Judaism. The biggest. And she tied to you in Olam Haba, and you can get rid of the embarrassment forever. That's what the Zohar says.
Tshuva is just to divorce.
Tshuva can fix it. Tshuva right away to divorce her, of course.
That's it, right?
First to divorce her, then it takes a long, long time to clean it from your record. I just want to finish because I have another lecture to run to.
Just a quick question. Before you said when people attack a rabbi,
They get, you quoted the Gemara before. What happened? You said it in Hebrew, but I didn't understand.
Yeah.
What happened?
Malig means disrespect the words of the rabbis.
What's the punishment?
Nidon betzohar otachat. They take all the waste. Imagine the bathroom after you ate the chulent on Shabbos.
Yeah.
So imagine Saturday night how the bathroom looks.
I understand.
Boil it, and fill up the whole pool with that, and that's where they are.
In Shema, you know.
Yes. In Gehinnom.
Physical.
Physical. Not spiritual, physical. Physically, there is a place that Hashem put the people in, that boiling place.
I read about, it was a rabbi, and a woman was yelling and screaming and cursing him, and all of a sudden the porch she was standing on collapsed and she died right there. And this is only 100 years ago.
I got to tell you something. You know, there's a famous story that happened with Rav Ovadia. He was learning in his building, and there was one woman that she was in charge of the maintenance of the building.
Yeah.
So every month they do a meeting. 20 minutes meeting that they ask to paint, not to pay, you know, to raise money from the tenants.
Right.
So it's not as organized in America, you have it official. Over there, one person has to knock on the door, the monthly maintenance for the buildings. Everyone agreed to pay something, that's it. And then from time to time meeting if they have big expense. So she wants all the tenants to come, but he sits and learn. So he sends his assistant. So they say, who are you? I'm the helper of the rabbi. I represent him. She said, no, everyone here is a tenant. He has to come. He said, no, that's a very big rabbi. He doesn't have time to sit 20 minutes in a maintenance meeting. So I'll do whatever I say. It's the same thing. No, I don't start the meeting before he comes. She didn't give up. She forced him to come. He went there. By the time the meeting finished, she became paralyzed in her two legs.
Oh, God.
She didn't get up anymore from that chair. It's a famous story. It's written in a book, and it was written in his lifetime.
Where does it say in Gemara that such thing can happen for somebody who invited the rabbi to the meeting?
No, it doesn't say in Gemara. But I just show you. Now, you want to say it's coincidence, you can say it's coincidence. I'm not going to argue with you.
I ask you, give me the source of, approximately the source of Gemara.
I don't get it. Did I say that it's written in Gemara that if somebody wastes the rabbi time, he gets become paralyzed?
Not only,
what's wrong with you today?
There's
one thing that does, it's written in a Torah, in a Gemara, it's every punishment that Hashem gives to people is measure for measure. You made the rabbi walk to you and waste his time, you got hit by your legs. That's the only thing that does written. To swear that what happened to her happened because what she did to him, I can't. It's not in the Ten Commandments. You want to think it's coincidence? Go ahead. What do I care? I know it's not. You know it's not. It is. I know it's not. We'll see after Eliyahu HaNavi come who was right, you or me. We'll see.
No, Rabbi, we have to go by the law.
I know. I didn't say I know for sure. Yeah.
Why does somebody get born in a non-religious family?
Yeah, his test is much harder. It's all because of his previous life. I gotta run. I have another lecture, and I know a few of you wants to talk to me. No time for more questions. I wanna wish each one of you Chag Sameach, Chag Kasher. Thank you for all the Tuesday, you all coming. Baruch Hashem for a while. Hope you enjoy. Please, you can take CDs if you need. Thank you.